You're with us for the morning show as we meet one of Wisconsin's Teachers of the Year. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Patty Zemke, a sixth grade health teacher in the Wausau School District. She teaches at John Muir Middle School and Horace Mann Middle School. She's one of five educators selected as 2022 Wisconsin Teachers of the Year. What do you want to ask this longtime educator about teaching in the pandemic? Teachers, let's hear from you. How have you changed? How has your approach to reaching your kids changed? 800-642-1234 to join in. Patty, congratulations and welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much.
So what have you learned from the pandemic about reaching kids, about teaching them?
Well, I've always tried to make connections with my students in the classroom. We spend at least 5 to 10 minutes every day just getting to know one another through silly questions and different activities. But during the pandemic, I got to see the other side of them as far as who's taking care of their brothers and sisters while trying to hold a Google Meet, and obviously met all their pets, because what cat doesn't like to walk across the keyboard when you're in the middle of a meeting?
What have you changed about your approach, your style of teaching? Because you are, you know, you do try to make such a connection with the students, and yet through screens, it had to be a whole lot different.
It was. But I actually think we got to know each other better through the screen. I know that sounds not what people would typically think, but in class, if you're just having a class discussion, not everybody answers. There's students that don't care to share what they think. On the screen, I got a written response from everyone. And so I was able to see what those students who wouldn't talk in the class would actually what they actually thought.
So there was a lot more writing involved.
Well, not a lot, you know, comment here, comment there, a sentence. But I just really enjoyed it.
How did you?
It was harder to teach that way because it was hours of reading and commenting, but it was worth it.
Did you have any challenges in keeping their attention in the virtual setup?
I do not think so. I had probably 90 to 100% participation because we just got to talk. So I know when we would have staff meetings, some of the staff would say, you know, the kids are really asking if they can just have some time and have a Google Meet where they can just talk and hang out virtually. And we need a teacher to observe that or listen to that. But we just talked. We ate breakfast together in the morning and talked. And then we'd get on to our curriculum as needed. But it was very comfortable to just hang out in the morning. And we started at 7:40 a.m. And they were all there ready to go.
Wow. If you're just joining us, we're talking with one of Wisconsin's 2022 Teachers of the Year, Patty Zemke, a sixth grade health teacher for the Wausau School District. You can join in. What questions do you have for a middle school health teacher and these experiences? What innovations in education do you want to stick around after the pandemic? What have you learned by teaching virtually? 800-642-1234. I'm wondering, Patty, you know, in the legislature, there's been a whole lot of pressure from lawmakers to have schools get back to in-person instruction. And as a teacher, did you feel that pressure to get back into the classroom?
I did not as a teacher. Personally, I wasn't pushing to have the students back into the classroom because we were doing just fine virtually. I love to see the students in the classroom. It's great to see the actual person in the face rather than just a little icon. But for me and my health class, we were doing pretty well online.
So what is your status now? When did you convert to in classroom?
The students came back late February. And it was a great transition. You know, for example, you asked about, was it boring, or, you know, I teach health education, so our topics generally aren't boring, and people can think about their life and what's going on and assimilate with the topic. But the first day back in person, we were starting the topic of puberty.
And oh, my students, that will get their attention.
Yes. And they were very vulnerable that first day. I asked them what was the most challenging part about puberty that they were expecting. And I had a student teacher who also started for the first time that day. And his eyeballs were so huge. They were as big as plates because he couldn't believe that the students were so forthcoming with what they thought the challenges were.
Did the students feel safe enough to learn and to focus in the classroom because they've had experience perhaps at home with COVID? Maybe a parent is an essential worker. And I know my little ones were so scared about returning to the classroom.
Well, we had the option. If somebody didn't feel comfortable coming to school, they could still meet with us virtually. So I did have students that were still at home. And I had students in the classroom at the same time, which that was hard. You know, I liked it better when we were all virtual, and it would have been better if we were all in person. So having to split the teaching was difficult because it seemed like the students at home kind of got left in the dust, which was the good thing about having the student teachers. They could deal with the chat on the virtual meet and address the students at home while I address the students in the classroom. And then we would just switch so that he got to practice teaching too.
I feel like that would have been a challenge when you're trying to be two human beings, one meeting the expectations of the in-person class community and also having the students at home in still in that virtual setup. Did you kind of feel like a tug of war between two, trying to, you know, go back and forth?
I did. And it was difficult. You know, sometimes I felt like the students at home would join the meet and then I don't know where they went. Like I would try to get their attention or, you know, type in a chat to them and they didn't necessarily respond. Where if that was happening in the classroom, then you just go up to that student and figure out what's going on. So if I wasn't connecting with them at home, it was really difficult to figure out what was happening and what I needed to do to help them.
What questions did your students have about the coronavirus?
I would say they didn't really have too many questions this year, but they did have questions when the pandemic first started the year before. And we would take time to talk about that in class. And I obviously didn't know that much about it. So we just kind of talked about fears and what their adults were doing to change lifestyle to address the issue.
So it sounds like you did some learning together.
Definitely. We learned together in health class a lot. There's times when I'm just like, well, I think we better Google that. So yes, we practice learning together all the time.
We have middle school teacher from the Wausau School District, Patty Zemke, one of Wisconsin's 2022 Teachers of the Year. What do you want to tell a teacher? Do you work in education? What challenges have you faced in the hybrid environment, virtual and in-person classroom, doing both at once? Join in 800-642-1234. Looking back, looking at the future. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. The Department of Public Instruction, DPI, named 5 educators from across the state for its 2022 Wisconsin Teachers of the Year distinction. We're talking with one of them. Patty Zemke is here of the Wausau School District on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What innovations in education do you want to stick around after the pandemic? What has your school learned over the past year and change about new ways to reach kids? Still time to talk about education, how classroom learning changed, what the future holds, 800-642-1234. And Patty's with us for about 9 more minutes. Patty, the CDC recently released figures showing a sharp rise in suspected suicide attempts among adolescent girls, and attempts were up 50% in February and March this year, year over year. How worried should teachers and parents be about the pandemic's effects on student mental health?
I think everyone should be very worried. I mean, the adults that take care of these kids should be worried. And the mental health has kind of been a taboo subject for so many years. And now that we have social media and we have the ability to do these surveys and hear from more people, we're realizing, wow, mental health is really an issue. I just want people to start listening to their children, start listening to the students. And that's why I take time every single day to just talk to my students, because you learn so much from them. And if they're going to turn to schools, which is likely, I mean, we get a lot as an educator to do for our students. And I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with addressing the mental health needs through making connections. But there are some teachers that are really afraid of that. They don't know how to address mental health. They're worried, well, if I take time out of my class, then how am I going to get to the end of the book by the end of the year? And we've got to realize that just making connections with our students will help them engage and will help them empower them to raise their voice and say what they need.
Do you find teachers in your district have enough training, have enough resources on mental health?
Well, I actually ran some training a few years ago. I was in charge of a grant that was to create safe and supportive schools. And so we did an online training where there is scenarios and it had a student saying something and then the teachers had to choose the right reply or figure out how to deal with that situation. And the training also included, how do you talk to that student's adult? Because sometimes the adult doesn't necessarily want to hear the concerns that your child may have, you know, a mental health issue. We also have a great counseling staff. And if I feel that a student's in danger, you know, they deal with it right away. There's like within the next 2 minutes, it's very quick turnaround. So I feel pretty confident in our counseling staff to help these students.
And it sounds like those minutes really matter, that you really can't back burner this or maybe get to it tomorrow.
Definitely not. If I feel that a student's in danger, I make the phone call right then. I just stop. Well, I let the student know that I'm going to make the phone call. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't blindside them. You need to keep the conversation going. In fact, at one conference that I went to, we were used to, okay, you call the counselor and the counselor comes and gets the student and then, you know, you go on with class. Well, one school district, if the student was connecting with the teacher and talking to them, the teacher still called the counselor, but the counselor was there to continue the class.
Ah.
While the teacher continued the connection and conversation with the student, which is very interesting. And I think, wow, that's kind of a good idea. Now, obviously, I wouldn't know the steps to take that the counselor would, but at least I could continue the conversation and then the counselor would step in.
Yeah.
Later.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with one of Wisconsin's 2022 Teachers of the Year. Patty Zemke is a sixth grade health teacher for the Wausau School District. And we want to hear from you. Do you work as an educator? What challenges have you faced in the pandemic? How has your teaching changed? How has your school changed? 800-642-1234. You know, Patty, your application for Teacher of the Year, it mentioned working with students to develop grit. Why is grit important?
Grit is important because it also helps empower the students. students want to be heard. They want to be listened to, and giving them the grit to continue and to push forward, even if someone doesn't want to listen, I think is important. I always say, if you tell one adult and they don't listen to you, then go tell another adult and keep telling until someone actually listens to you. You have to persevere, and grit is very important in all aspects of life.
Mm. How do you develop grit in middle schoolers?
Oh, I don't know if I can develop their grit, but I can help develop or see their resiliency. Building empathy in the classroom. When we're having those conversations and listening to one another about what they did over the weekend or what happened the day before, we develop empathy and we learn how to listen to one another and how to respond appropriately. And then just through that, sometimes the other students encouraging, you know, if the student was not feeling successful in something over the weekend, the others can help encourage, and I guess empathy develops grit in my mind.
It sounds like the relationship building that you are doing in your class each day is also, you hope to carry over into all aspects of their lives, as well as you see these kind of skills build up in action through these deeper conversations.
Yes. Yes, they need to learn how to speak to one another with social media and texting and chats. They don't really understand how to have, you know, a face-to-face conversation and talk to one another. And unfortunately, a lot of students don't have an adult at home that talks with them. The adult at home is on their phone also. Mm-hmm. So I really think it's important to continue learning how to have a conversation. If we wanted to talk about some of the racial unrest in our country, we need to be able to do that in a respectful, responsible way. So that's where I hope it continues, like into adulthood, talking about tricky subjects. How can we do this respectfully?
Let's bring in Karen now in Green Bay. Hi, Karen. What are your thoughts?
Well, I worked at a school district, and we went through the trauma training and all of those things, and the teachers were very accepting of it. The problem we had is that during the Walker reign, we lost guidance counselors and social workers. So the teachers really, the social workers that were there and guidance counselors could not deal with all of the students in the district. So we weren't able to deal with the students' problems, you know, quickly. And a lot of times the teachers didn't have time to take their time to deal with the child, you know, when they really needed it. Sometimes they go to the principal's office. The principal wasn't available. It was really tough. We need more social workers and more guidance counselors in our schools, and psychologists. It just was really, really sad.
Karen, thank you. Yeah, Patty, your reaction to Karen.
I very much agree with that. It has been really difficult with lack of staff and lack of funding. Our district is lucky that we are bringing in 10 more counselors this year. I think it's 10. Don't quote me on that number. Into our district to help fight the needs of our students. But yeah, we got all that trauma training and to become a trauma sensitive school, but then not to be able to help the students as we knew was needed was really disheartening.
Hmm. What might the fall hold and how you will reconnect with students? What are you anticipating?
I'm anticipating a lot of smiling faces. They always like to come back in the fall anyway, because during the summer, they don't get to see their friends as much, you know, whether they're traveling or they live far away. I think it's going to be a breath of fresh air, but also, you know, reteaching and relearning. They don't know what it's like to be in the classroom all together and how school starts they didn't even learn how to open up a locker last year because they carried all their things in a backpack.
Mm-hmm.
So even those that are going into seventh grade, my school is sixth, seventh, and eighth. Those that are going into seventh grade, it's going to kind of be like their sixth grade again, as far as learning lockers and time schedules and getting from class to class.
Patty, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me this morning.
Patty Zemke is a sixth grade health teacher for the Wausau School District. She's one of five educators selected as 2022 Wisconsin Teacher of the Year. Coming up, we meet Tania Fisher from Social X in Milwaukee as we look at racism, discrimination, and representation in long-distance running. Are you a runner? Is the sport welcoming to people of color? 800-642-1234. We'll talk more after a news update on the Ideas Network. Hi, it's Kate Archer-Kent. We want your input for an upcoming conversation with the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, Neel Kashkari. What do you want to know about our economic recovery in the Midwest, about interest rate hikes, about the economy overheating? Leave your question for the Fed president. Here is that number, 833-424-3327. Once again, that number, 833-424-3327. Be sure to mention your name and city when you leave your question, and thanks. Now we're talking about long distance running and how to affect change with anti-racism efforts and stereotypes. Do you feel safe to jog on the streets where you live? Where do you run and why? How do you think schools could encourage greater diversity in running or other predominantly white sports? 800-642-1234. Tania Fisher is Director of Health and Wellness at Social X MKE. It's a young professional diversity and inclusion consulting firm. She's lead captain of a running group called FEAR and a member of UW-Milwaukee's Athletic Hall of Fame. She graduated in 06 with five school records. Tania, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
So can you explain your running club, your running crew? What are they like?
Oh, okay. So FEAR stands for Forget Everything and Run. And we started in 2015. And what are we like? We're awesome. We really are. We're a great group of friends that have turned into family that eventually became friends through the love of running, kind of. That's still debatable, right? But we share this common interest of running together, and it's just grown into this great family aspect that is promoting change in our community.
So Forget Everything and Run, FEAR, the acronym. How did you land on that name?
So that name was actually invented by the former captain of FEAR, former president of Social X, Nyeri Davidson. So he was the one that came up with the name, but it literally embodies what it says, forget everything and run. So forget all, your fears, not to be a cliche, but forget whatever doubt you have, just to be vulnerable and get out here and do something that you may have never thought of doing before.
What do you hope runners forget about when they run?
Forget about the stereotypes of what runners are supposed to look like. Runners are mostly, you think you're supposed to be thin and like fit and maybe a certain color. And we just want people to forget about that, and that anybody can run. All you need is a pair of shoes. Forget whatever worries you have. That is the beautiful thing about running, that you can work out a lot of things through a run. If you have any worries, or even if you just want to make your grocery list, it is so easy to go for a run and kind of just work through those things, or forget about those things and just enjoy putting one foot in front of the other.
You know, I used to do a lot of running. I haven't. It's really not in recent years. But, you know, it really did give me that space to think and that space to zone out. And sometimes something would just pop in my head, or I would find like an answer to something that had been really kind of stumping me. Does that happen to you with running?
Yes, all the time. I love going for a long run and being able to process things that I've been thinking about, or if I've been stressing or have high anxiety, running has always been that for me, to be able to make that escape or to work through some problems, anything that I may need to work through.
So now with the group out running, can you kind of walk us through a typical run, what it might be like?
Yeah. So now, kind of post-COVID, we are meeting every Tuesday at Estabrook Park at 6:30 p.m. And we do a couple of announcements. So we just talk about some safety precautions while running, introduce any new members, and talk about any upcoming events that SocialX or Fear has. And then we have a captain. So there are 9 captains. And one of the captains will lead us in a warm-up to get us all warm and sweaty and stretched out and ready for our run. We run about 2 miles, or there'll be a 2-mile group or a 3.5-mile group. And you pick whichever one you want to do for that day. And we describe the route. One of the captains, Sam Likely, he does a really good job of making our routes. So he'll describe the route and we'll all take off. We make sure to take a picture before the run to just archive that we were there, we did it. And definitely not after, because it might not be as great, but so we do that. And then, yeah, we take off on our run. The captains, they either lead the route or they're in the middle floating to help anybody through there. And then we definitely have like a sweeper or the anchor of the train just to help push in that last person and to make sure that no one feels by themselves, that everyone is with someone, and the captains hold all the runners accountable.
I love the idea of a sweeper. I think that's really great, to make sure that that last person has a buddy, has that support coming in.
Yeah, so it's great.
I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned there at the outset safety precautions. What do you mean there?
So there's a lot of, even though it, forget everything and run, there are just some things that we just cannot forget. Being a Black female running, I have a lot more things to worry about. I have to worry about if someone will maybe try to assault me. So we try to encourage runners to wear bright clothing just so we can see each other. We encourage runners to run with one earbud out. 2 earbuds in, that gives me a lot of anxiety. It's just scary. You can't hear your surroundings. So you just need to be aware of what you're around and what's going on. We make sure to, our runners do not post, you know, those running apps are great and people love to post them after, but it shows like your map of your route. So that's scary. We don't want people to know, you know, what route you've been running every Tuesday. That's not safe. So we make sure that people kind of cover that. And make sure to always be, you know, with someone. And it's great that we are back together now, because during COVID, we couldn't run with each other. So you do have a group of people to hold you accountable and to make sure you're safe, you know. So those are kind of the safety precautions that we have to follow.
We're talking with Tania Fisher, who leads a running group. It's called FEAR. That's the acronym. It's aimed at increasing representation in the sport. She's director of health and wellness for the firm SocialX MKE. Where is your favorite place to run? What are your tips for staying safe while running? Do you run in a group? Do you only run at certain times of day? Do you enjoy running in marathons or other events? Join in any aspect, 800-642-1234. You know, Tania, Milwaukee has a reckless driving problem. And earlier this year, the police department created a special traffic safety unit to really try to address this problem. How do you feel about this issue as a runner with reckless drivers?
as a runner and an educator, a lot of these reckless drivers are young kids. This is our youth. So this is very scary. It makes me very sad. And I think these kids just don't have anything to do. And Milwaukee does have a lot of great things to offer. And it's just about tapping these kids into these events and activities and outlets for them. Being a runner is very scary. You have to be on high alert. I'm always worried. I don't never just fly out into traffic, even though I might have the right of way. People don't see runners. People don't see bikers and walkers. So you really need to increase like the pedestrians here, like the awareness of us. Mm. So that's always a worry. I've had to tap on a couple car hoods before, you know, because they need to see my little self running across there. So
just to get that eye contact, right?
Yeah. So yeah, that is scary, but this is my home. I've lived here forever and ran here forever. So I'm kind of aware, you know, of what to look out for and what to do. I've been doing this forever. So
Tania, what do you love about your Milwaukee?
I love Milwaukee. I love my community. I just do. I really love how small but big we are. How I can go to, just for example, I went to the Bucks game and I had the awesome opportunity of being on the Jumbotron. And it was so fun, right? So, but then I had all these texts rolling in. Like, I just saw you. And it's just like how small Milwaukee is, but big. Like, we're at this huge Bucks game, but there are still so many of my friends there. I love being able to go to a restaurant or a bar and seeing a friend, you know, and being able to share a beer with them. So that's what I love about our community. And I love how proud Milwaukeeans are of like what schools they went to or their favorite places to eat. I think people in Milwaukee are very proud of, the food scene and the restaurants and bars. And I think we're just really happy to share that with other people. So that's what I really love about Milwaukee.
We have Tania Fisher, long distance runner, consultant on diversity and inclusion, as we discuss representation in her sport. Where is your favorite place to run? In Milwaukee or around the state? What are your tips for staying safe as a runner? Maybe you run in a group. Do you run in certain places or times of day? How do you others view you as a runner? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Tania Fisher here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're discussing a Milwaukee running club. It goes by the acronym FEAR, Forget Everything and Run. They're working to increase representation and exposure to the sport of running, especially long-distance runs and marathons. Its members are supporting each other in all aspects of life, not just when they're out pounding the pavement. Have you been catcalled or threatened when you run? What can be done to make running more inclusive to people of all backgrounds and body types? 800-642-1234. And Tania Fisher is with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's go to Mike now in Franklin. Hi, Mike. How is running for you?
Oh, hi, Kate. Thanks for taking the call. It's been lots of fun. I started out running as a way to basically make a lifestyle change and got running with a number of people that I worked with. I used to work at Miller Brewing Company, and that was a lunchtime activity. And so we would run starting out, you know, up Highland through Washington Park. And it got to be as much a social activity as it did to be, you know, out for exercise. So it was a really good way to kind of keep up with each other, break the day in half. I'm also a member of Badgerland Striders running group, which is one of the largest running groups in the country. And I want to offer your guest, because I also know how we are a very segregated community, that because even though the pandemic caused a lot of the Wednesday fun runs to not happen, we have those. There would be an individual that would direct a run that would be through a particular park. We would love to include being able to run through Estabrook Park with our friends there. And then they also, you know, talking about long distance running, they will have training runs that they will put on for individuals that are going to be running like in the Lakefront Marathon or any other long distance run. So that particular group, Badgerland Striders, I think would be a really good one to link up so that we can start to become more of an inclusive group.
Mike, thank you so much. Tania, like, what an invitation there to kind of mix up these groups.
Yeah, that's great. We definitely need a lot more diversity and inclusion in the running community, especially in Milwaukee. So, yes, I appreciate that invitation.
You know, we've seen anti-racist running clubs pop up around the country. What advice do you have for starting one?
Oh, wow. I mean, I think just it being organic. Fear was started because there was a lack of representation of people of color in the running community. And, you know, it was always the mission to make sure that we are seen, we are heard, and that, we care about our health. So, sadly, with the shooting and killing of Ahmaud Arbery, our mission has became even stronger to make sure that we are visible. And it shouldn't be crazy to see or unknown to see a Black man running. And that is what fear is trying to create, that change, to change that narrative, that people of color do run. So everything has happened organically, and starting a run club, I mean, all you need is a great group of people that are willing to run. Mm. And it just has to be all organic and just willing to create some change.
Ahmaud Arbery, he died in February last year, and months later, prosecutors charged three white men with murdering him while he was jogging in suburban Georgia. Arbery was Black. How did you continue running after his death?
You know, to be honest and very transparent, it was very hard. We were in a pandemic. We just heard the news of his killing, and I ran without headphones for a while. I just needed to be aware of everything that was around me. I switched up my routes a lot. If I heard like a loud noise or I heard someone like behind me, I kind of would jump. It was just scary because that could have been anybody. That could have been my brothers. They all ran as well. That could have been any one of my fear captains, and that could have been any one of my fear members. So it is just very hard. There was a lot of anxiety, but feeling a lot better now being with my crew and being able to run with them and in a group and feel a lot safer.
We're talking with Tania Fisher, who leads a running group called Fear and aimed at increasing representation in the sport of running. She's director of health and wellness at Social X MKE. Let's go to Elaine now in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Elaine.
Good morning. In Milwaukee, this is probably not an issue, but Fort Atkinson is a small community, and I have an issue with people who walk and run, and they are on the same side of the street as cars coming up behind them, instead of running and walking where they're on the side of the street where they can see what's coming at them. And I drive a Prius, so, you know, a lot of times you don't hear the car. And I beep at them, and boy, I get some dirty looks. And it's like, you know, I didn't see any eyes in the back of your head. So how do you know if a car would go out of control? Mm. And I don't know if other small communities have the same issue.
Is this when there isn't a sidewalk or that it's a really tight shoulder?
No.
Okay.
I'm talking in the city, uh-huh. and especially in my neighborhood, sidewalks on both sides of the street, and
Let's get Tania's thoughts on running against traffic versus running with traffic. Tania, go ahead.
I definitely try to run on the sidewalk at all times. So that's definitely the number one option. I've had times where there was no sidewalk. I do run against traffic just so they can see me. You know, I wear bright clothes too. So if I absolutely have to, I will run against traffic just so I'm heading their way and they can see me as I'm coming. That is how I feel most comfortable, just to make sure people can see me or I can see the traffic coming. And if something is happening, I can easily try to jump out the way. But definitely the most safest way. I'm not condoning people run on the street. So definitely make sure you're trying to run on a sidewalk. If that is not available, try to be as safe as possible. And if you have to, you'll have to run on the grass somehow. But yeah, that's very scary.
You know, you broke records and won titles running at UW-Milwaukee. What were your experiences like as a woman of color, as a runner woman of color?
So I stated before, I love my city. I love Milwaukee. But it was very interesting that, you know, you have this big university and I was the only Black woman distance runner. So I was the only Black female on the cross country team until my sister later joined after I had graduated. So my experience was very different. You know, even simple things as my hair, you know, my teammates didn't understand how I didn't want to run in the rain outside because I just, you know, got my hair done. It was straight. Or how I had to run twice a day and how my hair was sweat out. Like, it was just kind of those things that some things I wasn't able to bond with my teammates about because there was no one that looked like me. I felt like I was, you know, probably the center of attention a lot of the times because standing in that cross country box getting ready to start, I was the only one of my teammates that looked like me. Mm. So, it was very different. It did make me stronger and aware. And I'm sure I got a chance, you know, to open the eyes of a lot of my teammates. And I got to learn a lot about them as well.
Tania, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Had a great time.
Tania Fisher, she is Director of Health and Wellness at SocialX MKE. She is lead captain of that running group called FEAR. You can find more information about the group. Go to our program page at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.